ようこそどうぞ、はじめまして。
Hello everyone, welcome back to the Glorio Chat. And you know what? I'm getting a little tired of coming up with these superlatives every episode. Can we just go ahead and say that we are the best anime podcast on the internet?
Hell yeah.
Like, oh, I can't think of anyone better.
I mean, it's kind of like the oldest marketing trick in the book. You make some kind of crazy subjective claim that nobody can really deny. And
greatest pizza in the world.
Yeah.
Greatest podcast from like people in three continents or something like that.
Or we could just say the
greatest anime podcast in the universe.
The best anime podcast, yes, that you are listening to right now.
Joke's on you, we've got five running.
Maybe we'll,
the once and future greatest podcast of all time.
Yeah, maybe we'll figure that out for next week or next episode, whatever.
Frank EX podcast.
Yeah, so we are back. We are here to talk about some anime. We're just about at the end of the winter 2018 season, and the new season's coming in hot and heavy in a couple days here.
Ain't no getting off this train we're on.
Yeah, we don't get breaks in between seasons anymore because we're actually going to be overlapping some episodes here.
Oh, Christ. Right.
Yeah, so
you're right.
You know, we do want to tie a bow and say our final parting words to a couple of our shows that we mostly enjoyed this season. So to do that, we have for the first time ever together in one podcast, the Team Glorio USA here with me today.
USA, USA,
USA.
So yeah, so we've got Iroh.
Hi.
We've got G.
Yo, yo.
We got Marlin.
It's a good Friday for a podcast.
Oh, I see what you did there. We are recording on Friday, folks, before Easter. I'm Jell. You know, like I said, we've got Team Glorio USA here. We even got both coasts represented. At least at the moment. I know, Marlon, you're usually repping the Midwest here.
Of course, but, and the center.
I actually am in the Midwest right now.
Oh, okay. I thought you were still back on this. Yeah, I can't keep track of everybody. But all right, so we've got the whole country represented in one podcast. But yeah.
Sure.
Anyway.
Yeah, go Illinois.
We've got a bunch of shows to talk about. Like I said, mostly ones that we enjoyed because they're the ones that we actually finished. We'll have
no hate watch this season.
Yeah, no, there were no I don't even know if there's anything I would have hate watched this season. Now I'm thinking about it.
Yeah, nothing really. There was nothing terrible.
Darling in the Franks.
Oh, that's true.
Does that count as a hate watch?
You guys are hate watching.
I mean, we didn't we didn't brand it
good
as
point.
Such, but you know,
it kind of became that. Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
definitely.
We'll say a few parting words at the end of the show for Darling in the Franks, which is unfortunately continuing for another season. But let's get started with what we got here. We'll get warmed up with kind of an easy one here, and let's talk about Garo, which just wrapped up a couple hours ago. Right?
Yep.
Yeah, we watched that last episode. A couple hours ago.
Yeah, not more than a few hours ago. Yeah,
you know, we all of these we're going to be kind of taking in perspective of, you know, we've kind of mostly I think talked about all these shows before, so we're kind of just kind of jump in and give our final thoughts. If you know we're not familiar with the show or whatever, you know, please check out the blog or our previous podcasts, and you know, you can catch up or just watch them, whatever. But so with Garo, I guess my question on that. Well, I'll let you guys go ahead and give you kind of what are your final thoughts on Garo.
It's pretty good. It's pretty good.
Yeah, no, Garo's all right. You know,
like Garo season one, we liked season one a lot. Like, what was that, 2014? Yeah. And then
yeah, I would say, you know, Garo, the 2014 Garo, the
Garo
what's
Seal
its, what's
Flames.
Its full title? Yeah, Garo, the Carved Seal Flames was perhaps the second best fantasy anime of 2014.
Look,
it was up against some tough competition.
Nobody liked Garo Season 2 is one that nobody likes. Garo Crimson Moon.
Yep.
And then
we don't speak of it.
Maybe the movie will be alright.
If it's got enough budget.
It's got Yasuko Kobayashi on it.
Alright, yeah. Maybe.
Garo Vanishing Line has proven to be just an all-around, solid, fun, pulpy, just like action show.
I really wish I kept up on that.
Yeah, totally. I mean, Garo was, it's just this fun, dumb ride from start to finish, on one hand, it totally gets what makes Garo good, right? It does all the things that Garo at its best does, the power of the human spirit to overcome its weaknesses, the responsibility of the strong to protect the weak. That's Garo, right? That is Garo. Like, even as edgy and like violent and whatever Garo gets, that's Garo at its core. And Vanishing Line totally nails it, but at the same time, it also did its own thing. Its protagonist, Sword. I'll say that one more time. The protagonist of Garo Vanishing Line, Sword, it was this huge brick wall of a protagonist who inhabited this confidence and, surprising maturity for, a certain kind of maturity for an anime protagonist that I don't think you see a ton.
It's kind of interesting because, for all the hubbub around Season 2, Crimson Moon, being like, oh, this time we're going to have a female protagonist, it wasn't really, deliver. No. But, I would say Vanishing Line, that Sophie, the, tag-along kid, does actually fulfill the role as protagonist because she's the one who, has to go through character growth and stuff.
Yes.
Whereas Sword, the eponymous Garo, is already, post-character development when the show begins.
She's the viewpoint character, right?
Yeah. Like Sophie's kind of the one who goes through the growth, and it's arguably she is the viewpoint character, whereas Sword kind of serves as, he's just somebody who's very, self-assured of himself. He reads
really
to me as...
Spirit God.
Yeah, he reads to me as somebody who had his big character development moment in another show, 15 years ago.
Hmm.
He already went through this, and he's fine now. And yeah, it's just Garo was just a really cool show that it was Garo, but it was also kind of doing its own thing, we didn't even mention it's kind of absurd, kind of pseudo nostalgic Americana aesthetic.
kind of almost
reminiscent of a Blood Blockade Battlefront, right? Weird take on America. There are magical diners with hot waitresses. You got gunslinging wizards and demon-possessed hot rods. It's fucking wild, man. It wasn't perfect, right? It definitely had its slower moments, and it definitely, it is kind of a shallow show in a lot of ways, but it's one with a lot of heart.
Yeah, it knew exactly what it wanted to be and did it.
That does remind me a lot of Blood Blockade Battlefront. A show with a lot of good characters where you can tell, for the most part, they're already, confident. And there's pretty much just Leo as the character kind of getting to know this world, but they already have lived in it. And so it's the same
thing. Yeah, that's kind of definitely vibe with Garo. Or at least with Sword and Gina, I'd say. They definitely kind of inhabit they give off an aura of, I'm not going to say they're mature characters, but yeah, they give off an aura of experience and maturity.
Right, because that ogles everyone, right?
I mean, look, Sword... When I say Sword is a mature character, I don't necessarily mean mature in the sense of, here's this really deep, nuanced character. I kind of mean in the sense that dude is confident. He doesn't second guess himself. He never doubts himself. He knows exactly who he is in the world and what he wants in the world, and he doesn't let the little things get in his way.
Mm-hmm.
Like bullets. He doesn't let bullets get in his way.
Just punch those bullets.
He fucking punched that bullet.
Punched the bullet.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's kind of the difference between...
Chopped up that tanker truck that was possessed by a demon.
Holy shit.
It sounds like the best way to sell this show is to just randomly throw out...
German suplex the other guy.
Sorry, Joe. What were you saying?
It sounds like the best way to sell the show is just to throw out random anecdotes like you guys are doing right now.
Yeah, it's... Because it's in a season that kind of prides itself on having a lot of emotion and heart and sensitivity to it, Garo is just all spectacle. You know, it's just all explosions and buff dudes fighting and hot chicks with guns and evil wizards and all that fucking anime shit.
That's like, so good. I don't know.
Yeah, it really was. And, you know, in many ways, I don't want to spend too long, like, you know, railing against it, but I do have to bring up that is kind of why I feel I wish the finale had been a little bit stronger. But I think it's a thing where I don't blame the technical execution of the ending. In fact, I think the ending was executed
it's
very
like
well.
Fine.
But I think it's one of those things where you watch that ending and you can feel the strain that MAPPA was under. It was a show that begged for just a few more fights and maybe just a little bit more budget, but it didn't have those, you know. Garo, Vanishing Line had to work with the reality of what it was and what it was probably going to sell, you know, the
mm-hmm.
we should just
you
mention
mean absolutely
here that,
nothing.
Right. We should probably mention here that Garo is super unpopular. Or not a super unpopular, you know, it does very well financially, but as an anime, you know, we always joke that like the original Garo, the first Garo anime sold like 500 Blu-ray copies.
I think it was less than that.
Again,
right?
Less 500, like three digits.
300?
Maybe 300. Wow. You know, I take that. Yeah, it was like 300, you know.
Why
as
did
in all in the entirety of Japan, in the entirety of the nation of Japan, only 300 people, less than some American public schools, bought Blu-rays for Garo, the Carved Seal of Flame. You know, it's – you really stop and think about it. Like, that – like, how could something so good do so poorly proves that there is probably actually not a merciful God in this world.
I mean,
more like but, Bad Friday.
Well,
I mean, it is.
Hey.
Oh, God.
Sometimes it makes you suffer so that you realize what you really have.
And that's a thing, right? Like, somehow Garo the Vanishing Line still got made. So, in many ways, maybe that is the actual miracle of this world. But in the end of the day, like whoever greenlit it probably funded it accordingly to those expectations.
Yeah.
Well, it does have the whole tie into the Toku franchise and everything, which I'm sure does well enough because that's been around for some time now. So, you know, I'm sure there are other forms of revenue coming in and not the 300 Blu-rays to the first series.
Right.
Totally. No, if Garo depended solely on its Blu-ray sales, Garo would have died with the first anime.
Yeah.
Like, clearly, the franchise as a whole is probably doing just fine in other avenues, and I wouldn't be surprised if, like, the Garo anime is just some kind of, like, vanity project, you know, that just exists to, you know, promote the franchise to, I guess, technically a different demographic.
Hey, guys, we have an anime, too. Woo!
Yeah, like it works.
I don't watch the Toku. I only watch the anime. So
it's slightly less like explicit, right? Than other Garo.
Yeah,
I did also notice that. Yeah, like the budget was a problem. I fell off on the second episode when there was like the Afro runner guy, and like the 3D model for that was just so wonky.
It definitely in a show like Garo, which actually generally has pretty good CG. So, you know, having watched Sung Ho Park's, you know, debut work, the, you know, Garo movie, which also used, you know, CG pretty heavily. And even the original TV show uses CG pretty heavily for the armor. It always actually looked pretty good. And I think one of Garo's strengths actually was that the people who worked on it understood the strengths of CG animation. You know, they never,
like,
they would never
complex movements and like bend the camera more and
right. Like they understood that you don't linger on a CG model for too long, because for every extra second you spend lingering on a CG model, the longer and easier it is for the viewer to tell that it doesn't look quite right. But if you keep the action fast paced and constant, it actually generally looks pretty good. You know, the penultimate episode of Garo Vanishing Line has a lot of CG, and it all largely looks pretty good. And that's coming from me, the guy who laments the death of hand-drawn robot animation.
Yeah.
All right. But,
pretty solid, just like pulp action show.
Yeah. Good anime. Yeah. Solid, solid show. Despite what I was just talking about, Garo is probably still one of my favorite anime of 2018.
Yeah. It's real good. I hope this one gets a sequel movie, like season one and two. Deserves it.
I mean, I think that's definitely going to happen, right?
Yeah.
You know, I think, deserves it. Like, again, I guess not to go back to the topic, but the ending of Garo Vanishing Line definitely does feel a little bit like, hey, tune in for the sequel.
Tune in next time.
Yeah. Huh.
So, would you recommend that somebody jump in on this series, or should they go back and watch the first one?
Sure. I mean, they're all pretty self-contained, to be honest.
Yeah, I agree with Eero there. They are almost entirely self-contained, right? Like, there's tiny, tiny references. You know, there are tiny little things, you know, kind of like Final Fantasy always has, you know, chocobos or whatever, right? Like, there are little things that every Garo has, right? Like, of course, you got the knight in the golden armor and all that stuff, but generally the plots and the characters have zero connection to each other.
Would you say this one is better, though, than the first one?
They're different,
maybe,
but
it's more unified than the first one, I think.
Yeah.
Like, when we talk about good season one of Garo was, we're talking about, like, very specific blocks of that show, because the rest of it was not notable enough to stay in our memories.
Like that one fight,
but the
parts blinking.
Yeah. I mean, look, that fight's real good.
It's a really good fight. It's an amazing fight. And
also Sun Goku Park.
Yeah. I guess the thing is, like, the original Garo anime is, again, also a very good anime that I highly recommend. But also, if you told me to describe anything that happens in the first 12 episodes, I couldn't tell you, because it was all kind of a meandering Monster of the Week show for a while. Like, Garo, the first anime, Garo did not get... It was good, but it did not become great until some very big events halfway through.
Okay.
I'd say they're both good in... They both have strong moments in different ways. The first anime probably has an overall more powerful character arc, just because its main characters are younger, so they have more room to develop, and it's satisfying to watch that development. Whereas with Garo Vanishing Line, like, Sophie is a great character, but she's kind of the only character in Vanishing Line that goes through any character development.
Right.
Right.
Hmm. Okay, well, sounds pretty cool, and I guess...
Still, it's real good. I had a lot of fun watching it every week.
I guess if you want to get into Garo, just flip a coin. Do you want to watch a fantasy show, or do you want to watch a more modern take on it? And you'll probably do pretty good either way.
Yeah, sure.
All right, so let's keep this train rolling and talk about another show. I think, G, you're the only one that actually watched this, but I know you wanted to talk a bit about it.
Yeah.
And
I guess I will keep talking by myself for another 10 minutes.
Don't worry, I'll take over that based off on our rundown here.
No, it's fine. I definitely do want to talk about it.
Yeah, so why don't you go ahead and we mentioned it briefly on one of the previous pods, but why don't you just kind of give us, you know, your thoughts on that one?
Sure. So if you don't know about Kokoku, it's basically about a young woman and her family getting caught up in a kidnapping plot that eventually leads to the reveal that this family actually has a magical artifact that can stop time. And so they use this artifact to prevent, or, you know, to rescue some of their family members who have been kidnapped, only to find out that the kidnappers also have the power to stop time.
Hmm.
and it kind of snowballs from there. And oh man, Kakoku is fucking wild. Like, you might not think so, right? Like, it sets itself up as, you know, a mundane horror story with a supernatural twist, you know, the abductions of the ones you love and the anxieties of a young adult trying to enter society, blah, 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 you know, all that stuff, right? And then you throw in the fucking time shit, and man, it goes for it in a way I just don't see a lot of anime try, you know? It's like for one thing that is actually kind of surprising, it kind of makes the brave narrative choice to actually keep the entirety of the anime within a single time stop. Like, they have time stop powers, but they only ever actually use them once in the entire show.
Really? It's not like how Gotro is fighting Dio. It's like,
yeah, exactly.
It's time stop now, and then now we're fighting regular, and then I'm using my time stop again.
So, like,
right, like the
entire show just like time is stopped around them, and they're fighting inside of.
The entirety of that show, its entire like 12, 13 episodes is within one in a single frame of pause time, and it's actually really interesting. Yeah. Like, it might sound limiting at first, right? But like, the thing that actually really works for this is Kakoku takes time to really examine what that kind of means and what that kind of entails. You know, when you and maybe 20 others are basically the only actual humans in the entire world, the alliances you make and the enemies you fight kind of makes all the difference in the world. And because of that very limited scale, Kakoku actually does a really good job of making its characters super compelling when otherwise they really wouldn't. You know, frankly, Kakoku's writing isn't actually like amazing. Like, it's not good enough on its own to make the characters super compelling if they weren't constantly in the spotlight, you know, constantly being examined and prodded by the show's narrative.
Right.
But because you spend so much time with them, you kind of grow to understand their quirks and their motivations. And really, the thing that I guess I really want to talk about the real strength of this show is how it managed to still leave a positive impression on me, despite kind of how contrived and shitty the ending is. Like, I don't want to turn people off and say don't watch it at all, but like, Kakoku's ending is really not super it's not super great. It does a thing that, like, okay, so technically you can't say it comes out of nowhere, because by bare technicality, a thing in the first episode, a completely innocuous thing happens in the first episode that gets referenced in the last episode.
Oh, really?
You go,
like an Earthworm Jim kind of thing.
Oh, one of those.
That's pretty good. Well, what?
You know, like, you launch the cow in the beginning of Earthworm Jim.
Of all the possible references you can bring up, you bring up Earthworm Jim?
What?
Wow.
Also, no, I never played Earthworm Jim.
I haven't heard of that game in like 20 years, but
wow,
yeah,
okay.
Sure. It makes sense.
For all the
comparison,
all the
makes
Earthworm
sense.
Jim fans out there, that one's for you.
Sorry, I didn't.
No, it's fine. It's fine. I'll just finish up. So,
the thought of an anime.
I couldn't think of a single anime that does the same thing, but Earthworm Jim, that's cool. That's a thing. Like, if it were any other show, if the characterization of Kakoku was any weaker, the show's ending would have immediately dropped the entire show into my most disappointing list. Like, immediately. Like, the ending made me go, oh, that's fucking bullshit. But I like these characters so much that, fine. I guess I'm actually somewhat kind of satisfied with it. Like,
the journey was good enough for you.
Yeah, or not even that. It's like the characters don't really earn their ending, but the alternative would have been so heart-wrenching. Like, to go through with the actual like ending Kakoku should have gone through would have put it on Devilman Crybaby levels of heart-wrenching. Like, it is like it is the things they do at the end of that show, like, because you come to learn about this like really dysfunctional family that still loves each other. You know, like the primary cast is this young woman and her grandpa. like they are kind of the primary protagonists of this show, and their relationship is really compelling. It's really heartwarming.
Right.
And like, if the show were to go all the
I got some of that like, first episode yeah, watching it.
Totally. And like they have a really good relationship with each other in a way that's you don't really see often. Like you don't really see this kind of intergenerational relationship in anime super often. You know, like this kind of like there's this feeling of like this old man who clearly cares for his granddaughter but isn't physically capable of protecting her most of the time. And it's if they had gone with the ending that quote unquote they should have gone with, it would have been maybe one of the most heartbreaking things I've ever seen in an anime. And for better or worse.
Oh, so there's like a proper ending?
No. I mean, like the ending I think they should have gone with, but the ending we actually got, I can't help but not be mad that they chickened out, because I liked the characters enough that I wanted them to be happy. So even if they didn't really earn their happy ending, I still came away weirdly satisfied by it, just because I liked them that much. You know, like the show did such a great job of fleshing out these characters. And not just that, but Kakoko just does some weird things. Like it does some really like I can't even begin to explain. Like you might think, oh, time shenanigans, right? Like, oh, I'm sure they do some stuff with like what a person can do when time is stopped. But no, man, like Kakoko really fucking goes for it in some super weird ways that I don't even want to hint at, just because it's so bizarre and so out of left field. And I think because of that, like Kakoko goes from a show that should have been maybe a 5 out of 10 at best to like a solid 7 out of 10 that I kind of came away from weirdly satisfied with.
All right.
I guess it's just kind of hard to see, like, if it's just one period of stop time, how you really mess with that too much.
But that's kind of what makes it interesting. Like you watch that show thinking, okay, when are they going to return to the real world? When are they going to, like, start time again? And it never happens. It never comes. And it's just these characters dealing with that situation.
It's like the first season of Rakugo.
It's kind of wild.
The first season of Rakugo, when you're like, oh, when's the we're like, okay, flashback's gonna end, right? And then it's just the entire first season.
Sure. We'll use that personally. It's kind of a brave narrative decision to just lean fully into it.
Oh, it sounds interesting. At least, I mean, would you actually recommend people go out and watch it? Like, if there's a specific?
I think so. Yeah, like I know the way I talked about it kind of makes it sound like actually maybe it's not worth watching, but like it's not a show I'm gonna like fight tooth and nail for, but it is one like unfortunately maybe not next season because it's so packed, but I do think it is an anime that if you find yourself with not a whole ton to watch, you know, the rest of this year, maybe it's one worth returning to, because if nothing else, just to see those ideas in play, to kind of see those ambitions realized, you know, even if it doesn't always necessarily stick the landing, I think it's worth watching their effort.
And I mean, we all want to break from high school kids anime at some point, right? So
speaking of high school kids.
Yeah. Yes. Thank you for the transition, Iroh. We got to keep this rolling here. And I guess it's going to be my turn to talk about a show that nobody else is watching. But I want to give a final shout out to Degashikashi, which is not technically finished. It's going to finish in about another hour after this recording here. The final episode airs.
Did we ever find out if the anime ending is coinciding with the manga's ending?
No, but I guess I'm about to. But they did confirm there's three chapters left of the manga, so I can't.
Right, that's why I'm like curious.
Yeah. I don't. Yeah.
It's like when Full Alchemist Brotherhood was airing, the manga wasn't done, and then the last episode came out at the same time as the last chapter, and everyone thought that was cool. Also, I was wondering if Degashikashi was doing a similar.
I don't know, but they set up where I feel like there could be a good spot for them to end it. Like I mentioned last week, season two has kind of converted over from the silly "Let's talk about candy" series and
to the "Let's talk about JavaScript."
Yeah, well, I mean, I guess the broad way of putting it is they've focused on the actual plot in season two, and they basically eliminated the most famous noticeable character from the series, who has not been in, who was only in the first two episodes, basically. And she, well, she just came back at the end of the last episode, because obviously.
Right. I was going to say, according to my two recommended videos, she's returned.
Yeah, I was actually genuinely curious about that because, you know, I have not watched any of Degashikashi, but, you know, by sheer cultural osmosis, you're like, oh, look at all these girls with these very distinct character designs, you know, especially what's her name? Hotaru, is that?
Yeah, Hotaru.
Is that right? The purple haired one? And
she's the one that has not been in the show.
Right. I thought that was kind of a weirdly, like, I don't know, almost a weirdly ballsy choice, right? Like a show that for better or worse kind of lives and dies by its waifus, right? Like to kind of just push her out of the way for most of this show's airing. But
yeah, well, they did replace her with another waifu.
I see your waifus.
Right. I saw this new waifu show up again also a lot.
Who is actually an adult woman that works for the candy shop.
Hey, man, I play Persona 5. I'm down. Yeah, exactly. I'm down.
Wait. They have the budget to pay someone?
No. They don't. She needs somewhere to live, so she works for room and board.
Hang on.
Yeah, so anyway, and she's actually
live in a rundown shack.
Well, it's better than nothing. yeah, and she's actually pretty great. She's the one that was doing the web programming and the clip I posted on Twitter with the, so this is the famous JavaScript. But the show has turned its focus over to the plot, and they did stick to it since the last time we talked. And they kind of wrapped up with this arc with our hero Coconuts trying to enter some manga contest or something, and they're kind of tapping into
he wanted to be a mangaka. I forgot that
so they're kind of like tapping into and I might be reading into this a little bit too much, but the kind of like, you know, at what point should you give up on your dreams or whatever, and which is a lot heavier than I would expect. I would expect it from this show in the beginning.
If I met this fucking kid, this fucking 16-year-old kid, be like, oh, I wonder if I should give up on my dreams. I mean, I fucking beat the shit out of this kid. God
well,
damn it!
Because I think the message that they're going for is that because I mean, obviously from day one it's clear that he's meant to run this candy shop and that he really loves doing it, but he just doesn't want to admit it to himself. Right. And he's a terrible,
and he has like two different girlfriends that he could get out of it.
Well, there's that too, but he's also terrible. He's also terrible at making manga. But the idea is
let me interrupt you real quick. If he's bad at manga, all the more reason I need to beat the shit out of him for doubting himself. Okay, because guess what? Fucking everybody sucks at drawing at 16, unless you're like some kind of fucking prodigy.
Interestingly, with this latest arc, he does kind of pull it together, and he does pretty good. But they kind of tell him that when they enter the contest, they tell him, look, you've clearly have divided your attention away from this or whatever. And so now he's basically they're telling him at this point now, you know, maybe you could pull this off, but like now you got to decide what you want to do with your life. And I think the general message is more so like your heart or your passion or whatever may be in unexpected places or something like that. But anyway, again, I might be reading too much into it. Point is, I think I'm just happy that there's been a lot more to this show than I would have ever expected, and that they really I don't know if I would say that was ballsy what they did with season two, but it is unexpected at least, and it's been kind of a nice surprise. And I'm looking forward to
because
it's interesting. The first season was literally the most formulaic. It was fun, but it was like the most formulaic.
I mean, frankly,
speaking of the most formulaic show,
I think that's kind of what I expected from the Gashi.
Right, yeah.
So hearing all this is actually kind of interesting. Like I didn't think it would actually go there. So
I was fully expecting this show to just be like every single episode, here's this new candy. And, but like hearing that it actually does other things. Definitely makes it more interesting.
I'm still going to beat the shit out of this kid, though, because, like, okay, let me explain. Let
you
me
leave coconuts alone.
Let me
you leave coconuts
no,
alone.
You shut up. Let me explain. All right, so this kid is Coppetry Crossroads, right? Does he follow his art career, or does he run this candy shop with this hot, busty, purple-haired chick and this way cuter blonde chick who runs a coffee shop and has piercings, and he's all like, oh,
he's
no,
also on
which,
drugs.
Oh, jeez. Oh, jeez, which
well,
option
all
do I
drugs.
Pick? Like, motherfucker, you got it good. Don't even try and act like you got to struggle, damn it.
Right.
Like, if you told me right now, hey, gee, do you want to keep your tuning in this art career, or do you want to run a candy shop with a hot chick? Like, dog, I like art, but I'll throw that shit out in a second. Like... get the F out of here.
You know,
with
final
this.
Final note, because you mentioned you brought up Saya, his other waifu,
love interest,
better
yeah.
One.
I might like
the better one based solely on
I might like the you know? I might like the new woman better, believe it or not. And also this yeah. being I feel like Saya kind of missed her chance at best girl because we have Hinata from A Place Further Than the Universe, who is the actual.
Look, no, you can't skip one in the segues.
All right.
Down the show.
Okay, fine, Iroh. Let's go back to your segue. So anyway, speaking of shows that are formulaic.
Hey, it's not that
it's
bad.
Not that bad. So we've talked fairly extensively about Takagi-san.
Sure.
Which I still don't remember the full Japanese title. Karakai
Jozu. Takagi-san.
Yeah, that I still don't understand why they didn't localize that. But
because we can't have nice things.
I just control F
yeah,
Takagi.
So... Before we talk about this, I'm just going to throw up now that I think we're going to talk about some spoilers with the manga, and if you're at all interested
yeah,
in
sure,
that,
I guess.
We're going to give up some things here. So, because I think that's going to tie into our overall sort of, I don't know if I'd say disappointment, but kind of the underwhelming finale.
Yeah, underwhelming.
Yeah. So, you guys, this is exactly what I expected out of this show.
Well, I would normally expect that, but... So
right.
I'll just give the kind of the background what I'm talking about with the manga. So there's actually three series tied to
right.
Takagi-san. So there's
the Takagi-verse.
The Takagi.
Yes.
Takagi-verse.
the extended Takagi universe.
Yes.
There are three manga. And so there's the mainline Takagi-san manga. There's the one with the three girls.
There's unlimited Takagi works route.
Yeah, there's
you know, the original Takagi timeline.
There's
yeah,
the one with the three girls that they've incorporated into the anime, and then there's a third one which is like the after the years later when they're married and they have a daughter, and Nishikata is still continuing to get owned by Takagi and now his daughter. So, normally I would have expected the kind of non-ending that we got, and it was a nice episode, but it was just like another like.
Oh, but like because these other ones exist, you expected the ending to be some sort of definitive get together.
Exactly,
between
and I understand it's not fair to judge the actual anime on the source material, and it's not even technically the source material; it's the related source material. But the fact that I knew it was there made me think that maybe there was hope in the last, like, yeah, it didn't even have to be much, just like during the credits or something, that they'd give us a shot or whatever. But yeah.
It didn't help that, like, there were at least three times during the final episode that they could have done it, and you thought that they were about to do it, and then they just totally fake you out. And like,
so you're being teased just like Shikata.
Yes.
You're sucking yourself out. You're the one who's been teased by Takagi-san.
We got owned.
It was you all along.
Yeah.
Yeah, like... I had to look it up because, you know, I always, you know, assumed that since there was, you know, we did learn about this flash forward manga before the end of the series. I assumed that the original Takagi-san manga was over, but it's not.
You know, like, you are on record in an early podcast saying that it is finished.
Yeah, that's kind of what my assumption was as
Oops.
Well.
Yeah.
So this is not me.
Oh, did
no,
we say that?
Absolutely not.
Oops. Well,
we are bad. We are bad anime journalists.
I mean, I figured it was the reasonable assumption
yeah,
if there was a follow-up manga about their adult lives. So, But I actually have not finished Takagi-san. I actually fell off.
It's not the same.
I don't know, like five
it's
episodes ago. That's the thing. I liked Takagi-san, but you know, not that it was all the same. But you know, it's, I mean, also like, look, I'm really busy these days. So I only got enough time to watch like 3-4 anime a season, and one of those had to be taken up by Darling in the Franxx. So
poorly.
You know,
you chose poorly.
I didn't really have time to watch Takagi. Yeah, well, no, I had to watch Darling in the Franxx. There's an obligatory masochism to that one, whereas Takagi-san, I wanted to keep watching, but, you know, just it wasn't doing enough interesting for me every week.
Yeah.
As much as I did generally enjoy it, you know, but like, that's the thing. I'm not going to badmouth it. Like, I know y'all have been having your spat where, like, you're fucking badmouthing Takagi-san,
like,
put South Pole Girls ahead or some shit, even though, like, that. Where, you know, that fight barely even like deserves to happen, but like, you know, and I'm not gonna say either way which way I mean when I say that, but spoilers, I don't like South Pole Girls that much, so.
Okay, so like I just think that Takagi-san, like, you have to go into it knowing that it's a developing relationship, and like, you know, you can't,
right, it's about the like, it's not about the like dramatic confessions, it's about the I spent a week going to school and like talking with my friend, and our relationship was slowly developing as we get close to each other. And that's the stuff that always gets skipped over in like more conventional romance stuff in a montage or something.
Or just like kind of assumed in the background. Right. But I thought, you know, it developed really well that like you can definitely see, you watch the first episode and you watch the last episode, that there's a difference in the relationship that the two of them have.
I would agree with that.
Yeah,
that's good to hear.
There's definitely progress. It's very slow and measured and subtle. But yeah, I mean, it's definitely there. And to you know, to Iroh's point, you know, in other shows, it'd be like, oh, he returned my handkerchief to me. Now I'm completely madly in love with him.
Social link rank
up.
Yeah,
and it's actually like believable, like, you know, these kids falling in love with each other because they're actually spending time with each other and they're friends with each other. And, you know, that's really kind of sweet and cute to watch. And, you know, I've said before, for me, the appeal is kind of almost like the nostalgia of it and just kind of remembering, you know, being that age and all the dumb things that I did. Like, so many of the things that happened to that show were just like word for word things that happened to me when I was like 13 or 14.
Oh man. Like, that's definitely one of those parts that I enjoyed about that
show. Maybe
if
he wouldn't keep bluffing in ways that you could call his bluff every single time.
I mean, that's,
he's always like, haha, I'll get her this time by lying. And then she's like, oh, you're lying, right? And he's like, how did she know? It's like, because you do it every time.
I suppose,
idiot.
Some part of the base premise does hinge on the fact that what Takagi-san does have some fucking latent
ESP.
Like ESP shit or something, right?
Yeah, she
like,
definitely is a little bit psychic.
Is her daughter just Kotura-san? Like,
my understanding, based on the few pages I've read of the spinoff manga, is their daughter takes more from Nishikata in terms of gullibility and owning herself. Yeah. So
I kind of wish they had him grow a little bit, because like I get it. He's like 13 years old or something. He doesn't know what to do around girls. Like,
I mean, that's a thing, right? You know, like, what could you realistically expect from the anime, right? Like, at the end of the day, these are like middle school kids. You know, most 13-year-old kids like understand the concept of crushes at best, but like anything more comprehensive than that is like foreign territory, right? Like mm-hmm. Look, if they ever make, you know, the Takagi-san the high school years anime where Nishikata owns himself into getting laid or something, like, that might make some sense, but, you know, middle school, like, you know, shit, dude, even, like, getting a kiss on the cheek is, like, already pretty hot and heavy for that age, right? So.
Yeah, no, I wasn't really expecting much different from the end. It would have been cool to just have, like, a little, I don't know, epilogue shot or something, like I said, during the credits or something. Not much, but and overall, I wouldn't say I'm, like, really that disappointed, but I don't know. It was just maybe it was almost too much exactly what I was expecting in the end. And
right.
I just wanted to man up.
I will say I am actually kind of surprised they didn't go for the epilogue I kind of expected they would, because there is a chapter of, I think, is it just the first chapter of the spinoff manga? But there is a chapter of some some manga in the Takagi verse where it's Takagi and her daughter looking through a photo album, and it's like, and the girl asks like, oh, you know, who's that? And Takagi says, oh, that's Nishikata. You know, he was a Nishikata-kun. He was a classmate of mine, you know, back in middle school or something. And, you know, the daughter's like, where is he now? And like, Takagi-san sheds a tear. It's like, oh, I'm so sorry. You wouldn't want to know. And then, you know, fucking the manga ends with a dude walking into the house. You don't actually see his face, saying like, honey, I'm home. And the door closes and you see the nameplate on the door is the Nishikata family or something. So like, and the last frame is like Takagi looking at the viewer and blinking, you know, winking. So like, I kind of half expected,
you've been teased.
Right, like one last tease where like, oh, you thought that she hooked up with somebody else, but actually no, they got together in the end. So for me reading that chapter, I was like, oh, that's actually pretty good. That would actually be a pretty good way to end the anime if they're never going to do any other seasons. But
my only thought is maybe they're planning on doing another season.
Right, so maybe that's the real...
They've announced a, like, OVA episode or something.
Yeah, sure. So if they're going to do more... And I mean, I like the show, but I don't know if I would... I would have preferred to just, let's put a bow on it now.
Yeah, like,
to be honest.
There's not enough material. I looked at it, and it's like they... You know, the whole switching desks thing that they did in the last episode was like 5 chapters ago in the manga.
Yeah.
So...
Okay.
Yeah.
Something to be said about ending a show, you know? Something to be said.
Yeah,
about
weird.
Ending your show well.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of shows ending, hey, we're on the same page, Iroh.
Hey.
Yeah, so we talked about the runner-up to our cute anime battle royale, and let's talk about the champion. Of course, we were talking about A Place for the Universe, a.k.a. South Pole Girls, and... I think they stuck the landing.
Man, the show was pretty good. Yeah,
I liked it. I
mean, I'll take your
guys'
word for
it. You know, that entire show, I was always like, next episode's when it's going to start sucking. And it never did. You know, and then I was like, oh, next episode probably won't be that great. And then it was good. And then, like, came around ending time, I was like, well, the ending will probably be lame. And then it wasn't, and it was good.
Yeah, it never sucks, for sure. Like, it's always at least, like, okay, even on the bad episodes, like bad in quotation marks.
Yeah, so I think our main concern was how are they going to end this, because we had the big looming elephant in the room.
So with her mom.
Which is what the episode that Shiraise was going to eventually have to deal with, the death of her mom. And
there was the like lingering concern in the back of my mind that they would show like a corpse or something.
There's no way.
Yeah, I don't know.
That'd be way too much.
Yeah,
that'd be really heavy.
I don't think that I didn't think they were gonna go there, but you know, they didn't always handle the kind of heavy emotional stuff like that great. It was never bad, but like, that was kind of probably one of the weaker areas. And I think they did pretty well, all things considered. Once they kind of hit that moment, it was still very dramatic and everything. But it was, I feel like they worked up to it well. That particular episode was kind of really well directed and had a lot of like kind of pauses and silence and kind of moments to kind of soak it in and reflect, and which they didn't always do with some of the other more emotional bits. And and I think it was good too that the actual final episode kind of gave us an opportunity to then, you know, move past that and appreciate the friendships and
perhaps the real South Pole, the friendships we made along the way.
Exactly. give us our chance to say goodbye to Hinata, Best Girl 2018.
It's pretty good. I'm not gonna
sure.
And, I think had it not been for some of these other final shows we're going to talk about, it would probably have been the best show of the season. It was definitely a nice surprise. Maybe
big... We'd say there's always a sleeper hit every season of something nobody thought would be good, and I think this fills that role pretty handily.
Yeah. I just was really surprised that you know, it made it so believable, this idea that they could go to Antarctica as teenagers. Like, you go into that premise and you're like, well, there's either one of two ways that this goes about. It's like, it's either a club about kids trying to get to Antarctica, or it's some really, like, just fantastical version of girls getting to Antarctica for no reason. But they actually kind of make, you know, it's still, you know, there's a little bit of a leap that you have to take, but it's a realistic leap. And, you know, they don't fall into a lot of the tropes. Like, the characters feel natural, yeah, except for the most part. Like, mm-hmm. you know, obviously the main girl is still the UE archetype.
She's also, like, by far the least important of all. Like,
yeah, I think, to your point, just the whole naturalness of it. And I liked how their friendship was not – their friendships were very, like – they weren't kind of black and white, like your normal, you know, friends forever type. There's kind of, you know, ups and downs and goods and bads parts of all their relationships. And you know, you can extend that to, you know, their personalities, and there's a lot of variety there. It made them feel more like real people than, you know, cardboard cutout anime stereotypes. And, you know, just the execution stuff like that just really put it over the top. So, It's nice that it's also an anime you could just, like, wholeheartedly recommend to anybody to watch without.
Yeah. You don't get too many of those.
Yeah, without having to put any asterisks on. Well, there's also naked 11-year-old girls in it. Or, you know, other anime, whatever. But yeah, real good show, and like I said, you know, one of the best, if not for some of these other shows we're going to talk about. So. Let's move on and talk about Marlon. We're taking over with the actual best show of the season.
Oh, yeah.
And the best show. Probably it'll be a strong best show of 2018 contender, I'm sure. But
or talk about while it's still March.
Yes. And we have like 26 yeah, hours of March left time. Here. So March comes in like a lion. And yeah, season 2 has been real good. We got one episode left. And I feel like it's...
Okay, so how many shogi matches have there been in the past, like, season?
Like, one? Two?
There's been five. Because there was one for if we're including the stuff from last year, there was one for him getting into the championship of this tournament. There was his best friend losing the championship, getting into the tournament, and then him beating the guy that beat him. And then there was... Yeah, so I mean, not that much. All
that's five. That makes it five over like 22 episodes, right? Not like, yeah. I think it kind of addressed whatever criticisms we had of season one, kind of blew them out of the water. And I think it's kind of a rare season two that it might actually have surpassed.
That
first
is rare.
Season.
I would say for sure, like. Everything is so much better. Yeah, like the shogi is so much more engaging. And some of it is just because, you know, we've gotten to grow with these characters and we actually care about them a bit more. But yeah, it's just like the characters are so well written. The problems that they have are so.
So it's still about understandable. Shogi Kid and his, like, lady friends that he lives with, right?
Yeah. Well, he doesn't live with them. He just visits them a lot.
It's kind of expanded out a bit past Ray's problems, and you know, the biggest arc.
There was the bullying arc that everyone was in a tizzy about.
Yeah, so that was the biggest, and I'm glad they kind of carried it through the rest of the season. They didn't just like say, okay, problem solved now, and.
Right,
but they didn't let it dominate the whole season either. It was just very well balanced in that regard. But you know, they fit in. I think the match with I don't remember the old guy's name.
Yanagihara, I think.
Yeah, I don't remember, but they had. I think that was a perfect example of how season two improved on season one, because it was a quick two episode story. And it was about the oldest, like, high ranking shogi player currently. He's like in his 60s, and
They were saying 70s.
Or he's like in his late. Was he actually in his 70s? He's very old.
Yeah.
He's very
old.
Old
man.
And they turn it into such a compelling, tightly told, quick story that it was just like blew away all the stuff in season one. Like, as much as I like Shimada in season one, like they gave him half of a season and he's cool and all, but like I don't want a half a season of him. and this was just like a tight, well-told, quick little side story. And all of these the side stories do ultimately kind of give Ray kind of more perspective on his situation. Like, you know, am I going to end up like this guy? Am I going to end up like this other guy? Which is interesting. So, you know, they all tie back to that. But yeah, just it was such a good example of like how they've improved in the second season.
We always say that it's always best when it has the sisters in it. And I make this joke all the time, but if it had been competing for the Cube Battle Royale, like it would win just hands down. Like there's no right. Yes. I'm right, Joe. Right. Like,
I don't know about every single week, but the cutest moments in March probably crushed everything except maybe some of the school babysitter stuff. But,
and it's really just like Shinbo working on something that isn't super like skeevy. Yeah. Like super trashy. So it like distills all of the best parts of his style, the best parts of his directing. And it puts it on this work that really like deserves to be given all that attention.
Yeah. And it's not skeevy. This is like another show that you could recommend. Like I actually had my sister watch this and she loved it. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it is very rare to see Shinbo being, you know, a notorious perv working on this, but he's such a talented director that it is awesome to see him applying his talents to something that's actually good. You know, previously I love his style so much that it actually made me slog through 80 episodes of Monogatari, and so I finally gave up. And now that I'm able to watch something with his style that's actually like, you know, good with no asterisks or caveats, it's just awesome. So,
so speaking of directors with really good styles,
I wanted to talk about Lion more, but you're right.
Go ahead, Marlon. Give us your parting thoughts here. How do we think this is going to end? Because as far as I know, there's only one episode left.
So, I mean, he's got to get into the high school, right? There's no other way. That this show can sometimes throw some punches, but I feel like so one of the sisters is trying to get into the high school that Ray is in.
Okay.
I don't think that's
because she's like in him or
no. It will just like they're good friends. Like that's one of the cool things too. Is that, you know, me being the kind of like romance guy, I really want to push for that. But this show is kind of showing that no, like they're good friends. They support each other. They, you know, like Ray when Hina was down would support her. He actually like traveled to another city because he knew that she would be in trouble.
It could go there, and it kind of hints that maybe it will, but it's whether it does or not is not really important, I guess.
Yeah, it's that they support each other, and you know that they love each other, not in the romantic sense, but as you know, just people mm-hmm. that they care for.
Yeah,
and also when the Olympics were on, was like the worst 3 weeks of my life because like.
I guess I better watch Darling in the Franxx.
Yeah, exactly. I had to watch Darling in the Franxx was one, and I couldn't watch. March goes in like a
that's,
comes in like
that's
a lot,
the worst so. Thing we can say. That's the worst Olympics. Thing we can say about season two. That's the worst thing we can say about season two is that it was on hiatus for three weeks. Early going, they did in the first half, they had the part with the
maybe the worst sisters. Trade-off imaginable.
Well, don't worry. Now they can binge watch it. Just
man,
like
you're trying real hard on these transitions, Iro. I gotta give it to you on this one, but yeah, March comes in like a lion. It's gonna be a strong best anime of the year contender, and I think, yeah, and I think
I promised I'll catch up on it by the end of the year, probably.
I think our next show is also an anime of the year contender. See what I did?
There we go. You're just like kicking the legs out from under me here.
So,
he's like flashed it behind me and hit me.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Iroh.
After all my shots missed.
I'm sorry, Iroh, but I had to take the shot. I had the shot and I had to take the shot. So, Devilman Crybaby.
Yeah.
I just want to say
this is the real Crybaby, baby.
After like it came out 3 months ago and then it was forgotten after 3 days.
Yeah, so I did not end up watching this. I did not have the strength. And part of it is, well, there's a lot of interesting things to say about the Netflix connection, and maybe we'll get to that after we talk about the actual show. But why don't you guys tell us about the experience that was Devilman Crybaby?
It was like just distressing at certain points. Like just, such a grotesque and fascinating, but just like unsettling. Go.
It really gets you right there.
Yeah. No, that's that's what makes it so good. Like Devilman Crybaby. Oh man, you know, like even just thinking about that show, like thinking about the things it does and what happens to the people in it and what it shows. Like Devilman Crybaby is this really kind of ugly, crass thing, but you know, by doing so, I think it does a fantastic job of highlighting the extremes of the human condition. You know, like how ugly and violent and close-minded and terrible we can be, but also, you know, the unyielding power of our compassion and empathy. And in many ways, Devilman Crybaby is about, like, Devilman Crybaby is about how even if we cannot survive in our current state, that our sacrifices are not in vain. You know, like, it's just...
It's also kind of...
Sorry, go ahead, like, Marlon.
Just, like, interesting how it almost seems to be like man always has to evolve. Or, like, it has to adapt to its circumstances. And so, like, you know, the Devil Man is just the next step. Or it would have been until, you know, the very end of it.
Yeah, you know, I feel conflicted here. I don't want to go too much into spoilers just because it is a show that I...
Right. Yeah, I'm going to, if you don't mind, like, for people who don't know what Devilman is, it was originally, like, manga from the 1970s by Gonagai about a young man who gets possessed by a demon because his friend has discovered that demons are returning to Earth and will wipe out humanity. And the only thing that can defeat a demon is the power of another demon. And if you're pure of heart, you can be possessed by a demon and still, like, retain your consciousness. So the main character, you know, goes through this process and becomes Devil Man.
Yes.
Neither a devil nor a man.
It's like there's...
But Devil Man
is an actual franchise, or like, property in the universe. They never really go into the weird thing. Like, he looks like...
Well, I think some of that... I think some of that is Masaki Yuasa's, like, directing,
yeah,
like, quirks.
We should mention the kind of interesting collaboration, because I think that's what had people instantly interested in it, was the fact that you were taking this old Go Nagai property and teaming it up with, you know... Yuasa, who's, you know, known for Tatami Galaxy and Ping Pong, and his very, very unique kind of style, and just the prospect of that combination is interesting.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And
I think personally it works amazingly well. You know, the thing with Masaki Yuasa is his works are always, you know, like, if you want to be like, you know, droll about it, like, you could say that Masaki Yuasa has a very kind of ugly art style, an ugly animating style, you know, compared to a conventional anime. But yeah, but I think the thing that works really well is in all of his works is that there is kind of there is always a beauty in the ugliness. You know, there's always an aesthetic quality to it. Like, you can tell that it is not ugly because of a lack of technical skill. It is ugly because he intends for it to be that way. Mm-hmm. And I think that works really well with Devilman Crybaby, which is about both the ugliness and the beauty of human nature. And it works surprisingly well. And, you know, also it's stylish. It's super stylish. And
I didn't think about it, but looking through his old works is like, he's always been a little perverted, and he kind of got to like just let loose.
Yeah.
Right, being the Netflix like original
it's
anime,
NC-17, basically.
Yeah, they can totally go for it, and like you would still think, oh, that's just going to be like, you know, boobs and blood, and it is boobs and blood, but Yuasa pushes it to the level that really, like, that's the thing. It's not a realistic style, but the things he portrays and depicts has such a raw quality to them.
Mm-hmm.
It, you know, like, because the violence that many of its human characters commit and have committed against them is so depressingly relatable. You know, like, I was talking with Iro about this, back when we were watching this. Like, there are scenes from later in that anime that are directly inspired by real life footage of ethnic cleansings in the real world, of real life executions, of people being lined up and shot. Like, you know, or if not directly, like, traced or whatever, then definitely inspired by the ways those videos and photographs have been taken and shot.
Right.
And it lends a very, like, I don't want to keep saying real over and over again, but that kind of is what Devil May Cry Baby is. It's real as fuck.
You can connect it to real.
Yeah.
Like, it's emotionally real.
Like, it beautifully, like, in many ways you want to say this is all Yuasa, but it's actually, a lot of it is in the original Go Nagai.
It's pretty straight.
Like, all this talk about, like, how the demons are, like, this really good metaphor for, like, human prejudice and the ways humanity will justify atrocities against each other because of, you know, differing ideologies and appearances and cultures. And Yuasa, you know, that's not all Yuasa. That is a lot of that is in the original Go Nagai manga, but Yuasa enhances it and he gives it a realistic tone and flavor by how he chooses to portray it. And it's just a really rough anime.
It was so tough to watch. Yeah. Like, but I can tell that it really is good. Like, it deserves the praise, but it is just so draining.
Absolutely. Like, it's funny that this comes out with Netflix with the, like, binge model, because this is like the one show we've spoken of so far that I could not bear to watch all at once.
Yeah, no, we had to watch it in like two episode like chunks, because
so
you fucking walk away from an episode of that show and you kind of just spend the next hour staring at the wall wondering, like, is the human race worth it?
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about the Netflix thing, because I find it interesting that the show, when it came out, was getting so much praise. It was the hottest thing for about a week.
Totally.
And because of...
then disappeared.
Yeah, because of this idea that Netflix has, and we'll talk more about some of their other ideas with the next show, but spoiler alert. This idea that they have that of just dumping out all the episodes so you can binge watch them, for an anime that, you know, we're used to the community having a weekly discussion throughout the course of 3 months.
Yeah.
You know, suddenly we're dumped with this thing that's great, and then we talk about it for a little bit, and then, all right, we got like 10 other things we got to watch, and then I have to worry about, like, are people going to forget that this thing exists?
Right. So, like, even just the past 2 weeks, Sword Guy and Ico Incarnation both came out, and, like, nobody's been speaking about them at all from what I've seen.
Yeah, they
those are two
right more Netflix
shows.
Originals,
yeah, they've made
know?
Out even worse because they're kind of just dumped in the middle of nowhere. Because I think at least Devilman,
right, like Devilman came out at the start of the season.
Right.
Yeah, at least it did have that. I guess maybe that works against it, but like the idea that we could actually watch it when it came out instead of see people in like Europe get to watch it as it comes out, and then we just like have to wait.
I mean, I think even the worst thing is, like, here's the thing, right? Like, we all want to watch good anime, but also there's a lot of fucking anime. And, you know, at least Devilman Crybaby had the decency to come out at the beginning of the season. So, you know, it could at least pace itself with, you know, the rest of the shows airing. But, like, if you come out in the middle of the season, like, if you come out in you know, fucking 2 weeks ago, and you're like, hey, here's this whole new 13-episode anime to watch. I'm like, dog, I'm fucking busy. Like, I got other things I gotta watch, you know?
That's probably the main reason I did not watch Devilman, was just like, I don't have the strength to commit to like a whole pile of episodes.
Right.
Like, if you're just going to throw one episode at me where I can kind of get the teaser of like, all right, let me see if I'm going to like this or not. Like, that's easy. But, you know, when I know that there's a whole season there sitting for me to watch, like, I've got so many other things to watch too. It's just like,
right.
But I guess the other, I mean, on the flip side, it's like, are we overestimating the value of, you know, the kind of diehard anime fans that are watching seasonally and
maybe
versus your average like Netflix person who they watched a couple Marvel movies and then suddenly Netflix recommendations is telling them to check out Devilman Crybaby and they're like, oh, what's this thing? And they, you know, which I'm assuming that's what Netflix is going for, but
sure,
you know, I don't know. I think you know, the Netflix thing is like a whole nother conversation. I know that we were gonna possibly do an entire podcast on, but yeah, it's just interesting to see. I just hope it doesn't take something that something as good as, you know, Devilman Crybaby and then just kind of makes it disappear from any conversations within the anime community.
Like, I think Devilman will probably survive because it's got the pedigree of like Yuasa and stuff behind it, and like because it is
legitimately that good, you know.
Yeah, it's like, good, and it has
I'd like to
franchise
that
legitimacy behind it.
Yeah, I at least hope that it's still, you know, that people are going to still be talking about it, because, you know, again, like, not to go back too much to the conversation about the show itself, but just like, it's a, you know, Devilman Crybaby is a show that I hope, like, it's not the kind of show that people are going to be talking about 10 years from now in the way people talk about, like, you know, fucking Cowboy Bebop or some shit, but it is a show that I hope people will be thinking about on, like, a more academic level.
Yeah.
You know, like, I hope it is a show that people will talk about when people are talking about, like, can anime or can any fictional medium tackle these real heavy, very real topics in a kind of, you know, nuanced and relatable way, you know.
Yeah.
Like, I hesitate to use the word,
you
but,
can definitely like appeal to,
but yeah,
to the, like, Game of Thrones crowd, where it has, yeah, this deeper aspect to it, but there's kind of this surface level thing,
yeah,
that appeals to the like, you know, yeah, the Game of Thrones kind of crowd.
Normies.
Hey, there's this gore and there's this nudity, but like, there's something deeper if you actually dig for it.
You know, and I think I do feel conflicted because, like, you know, as I said before, me and Iroh watched the show in like 2-3 episode chunks, and in some ways I am a little bit grateful it all came out at once, because I think about certain events in that show, and imagining having to live with some of the events that happened in that show for an entire week before the next episode.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I spent about two weeks at, you know, 2 weeks watching Devilman Crybaby in this melancholic haze. You know, I don't know if I could handle a whole season like drifting through life wondering like if it's all worth it in the end.
Would that full week be enough for you to get over the previous episode before you hit to
there are certain events in that show that are so crushing that, like, I don't want to get all flowery and shit, but like, it's a show that, like, it gets real in a way that, like, stabs at your soul or some shit, you know? It, like,
yeah.
Oh my god! The things it does. Like,
oh, I'm gonna have to get on that at some point, and I'm sure it'll pop up. If not in general, at least in our own end of the year discussions.
Yeah, I would definitely say, even, you know, you asked me that question earlier about Kokoku, I'd say for Devilman Crybaby, I definitely think this is a show people should be watching. You know, I hesitate to use the word, as I said before, but I think Devilman Crybaby is important for the medium, for the genre. You know, it treats things in a way that I don't think I've ever, no, I don't want to say never, but it is willing to tackle things that most anime are even afraid of skirting around.
Yeah.
Especially Japan, a country that is almost entirely, not entirely, but is often isolated from these events in the rest of the world, you know?
Yeah.
The fact that it's just so willing to, like, just shove it in your face and be like, no, like, fucking look at this shit. Like, this is what's happening in the rest of the world. It's...
Yeah, it's powerful.
It's something. It's something entirely, you know? Yep. And,
yeah.
Definitely the one. Watched. Definitely one to check out. But again,
even though nobody's speaking about it anymore, still go watch it.
Well, that's the thing, right? The conversations for like that week were
there were a lot of superlatives going around in that one.
A lot, you know, I could say from my own personal experience that at least on one certain image board, that Devilman Crybaby was probably took up maybe 70% of the active topics on that board for a good 2-3 days, before it died off.
All right. Well, definitely, I'm definitely going to try to check that out. And, you know, everybody else, here's your periodic reminder to check that out if you missed it in the beginning of the season. All right. So let's keep rolling. We have one more show we want to talk about. The other show ruined by Netflix.
The other Netflix show.
Is it? Yeah.
So as we're talking about Netflix binge watching garbage, I get it that if you're going to stick to your dumb binge model, fine. But then we get stuff like how Kakegurui came out and like the subs were bad and stuff.
Don't forget, what was it? Little Witch Academia also.
Or I
kind of got the Netflix treatment.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, I can get it if we need the time to produce the English dub because we want to release the English dub and I still hate the binge model, but I can be like, okay, fine. But then,
right? But even that argument is fucking falls flat in the face of Fooney's simul dubbing,
right? Or of Violet Netflix's own Violet Evergarden, which we have spoken of at length that podcast before. But it's running week to week in Europe with dubs and everything, but not in the United States. So right. Obviously, Glory Blog does not endorse piracy of any kind, but. Team Glory USA, the only way we can watch the show is through clandestine means, right?
I think we'll have a more extensive discussion on this later, but what do you do when it's like, I could, if I decided I wanted to spend $1,000 an episode to legally watch Violet Evergarden, I would not have any option to do so. And that's just ridiculous. And I'm sure it's some kind of contract deal. That's got to be a money thing, where somebody did not fill out the right paperwork or something. But
maybe.
I'm a lot more cynical than that. I honestly think it's just going to be it's probably just going to be that Netflix USA probably looks at the numbers and they see that a lot of Americans binge watch.
Right, and it's totally that.
They're just holding on to it all at once until it's all out, you know, because that's what they did with Little Witch Academia. Same thing. Mm-hmm. If you wanted to watch it legally, had almost zero fan momentum because zero mainstream anime fan momentum because anybody who wanted to watch that show weekly was shit out of luck.
Well, yeah, with Little Witch Academia, it had the previous titles and trigger behind it. And with Violet Evergarden, it's been hype. It's anything Kyoto Animation is going to get a big boost from that. I don't even know the names of those other two shows that Iroh mentioned that they kind of dumped in the middle of nowhere because they didn't have that kind of pedigree, and there's literally no reason for us to think about it. Anyway, I mean, we're kind of getting off track a little bit, but it's just not only is Netflix frustrating, but it's frustrating in inconsistent ways. And it'd be one thing if they just had a consistent plan and then you're just like, all right, no, this is how it's going to be. We'll just deal with it how it is. And, now they tease us with, well, we could simulcast it if we wanted to, but we don't. So anyway, let's talk about
the actual show. It's just frustrating and confusing.
Yeah. So let's talk about the actual show. We have talked about Violet Evergarden fairly extensively on previous podcasts, so we don't have to get super into it. But I think it's fair to say that from the point that we left off, or maybe I should say up until this most recent episode, I feel like the show has improved considerably and worked its way into the kind of show that we were kind of hoping it to be until this week.
And my understanding is what the novels that's adapted from are actually are those past few episodes that were this is what the show is supposed to be are the ones that are adapted from the novels.
And you know what? You know what? I wouldn't know, because Violet Evergarden took too fucking long to get there. You know, like
people always speak to that one episode with the princesses. That's like the one that really changes to more normal Violet. Is that right?
Yeah, the one we talked about on the last podcast, where they kind of do a mini time skip, and you know, Violet is kind of more of a human being, and they follow.
And they're like, "What? Where did this come from?"
Yeah, they follow.
I mean, sorry, dude. Too fucking late.
They follow up with that nicely over the next couple of episodes, including, you know, a lot of people talked about episode 10, which was kind of a real gut wrenching slow motion car crash that you knew exactly what was going to happen, but like by the end it still gets you because it's such like an emotionally gut punch, and it's nicely made, and like, and you're just like, man, if the show had this would be one of the best shows of the season. And
because
then they decide to periodically just focus on the least interesting character in Violet Evergarden.
Like Darling and the Franks.
The episode 8 and 9, they kind of get into a more detailed flashback of like, you know, Violet's final moments with Gilbert and everything like that. And I actually thought those episodes were okay, but
sure.
They were clearly like, I would much prefer. Basically, what they should have done is they should have just dumped us kind of in the middle of Violet doing these jobs for her clients. And giving us the little hints as we go along of what happened in her past and how she got here. And then you'd start as you started to unravel where she was and where she is now, and you see the progress, then that would have been really satisfying. And it's so frustrating, right? Because you see that potential there in the few episodes.
You see all the pieces that exist within the show, and they're just all in the wrong order.
And a couple of episodes, they like really actually put it together, and you're like, man, this could have been a great, great show. And I think, you know, as critical, I think maybe our opinions will vary on this, as critical as we are of it, I still think it's a pretty good show. It's just, it's so frustrating when something is good enough for you to see that it could be great and it doesn't make it.
It's absolutely gorgeous. Like, that Princess episode was the first one where I was like, this is almost like decadent, just how good it looks, just how like how lush each character's hair and clothes.
There is a little too much wind.
Every motion. A little too much wind, but like
they have to show off that hair animation.
Like each woman has a different gait when they walk, and it's like, why can't...
Who paid for this?
Yeah, who paid for this? Like, why can't it be on something I actually want to... I want to watch. It is such a good looking show.
Yeah, I will say I still hate the director, and it looks good in spite of him. I was complaining this week with he overuses the Garth. This week he overuses aside from some bad transitions, he overuses the Arthur fist clench. which I...
What is this?
I hope everybody understands exactly what I'm talking about when I say that. But there are still two episodes left. Is that correct, Iroh?
So they're
going to be bleeding pretty heavily into the next season. But you know, we're not going to have time to talk about it at that point. With two episodes left, I don't even know what they could do. This week they kind of went back into the war angle again, and nobody cares about that. I don't know what they're gonna...
So I'm actually kind of curious. I wanted to ask this, if you don't mind. Like, as someone who fell off at the Princess episode because I just had enough of that show, like, why is the war part specifically weak? Because, you know, knowing me, like, ostensibly, that would be maybe the part I'd be the most interested in.
Right.
But also, knowing...
But it all just kind of feeds into... Like, oh, Violet Evergarden, your beautiful broken bird who also can murder people.
Right, so is that right? Is that kind of the issue? Is that, like, it's Kiyoani, like, kind of falling into, like, areas that they clearly are not, like, they don't have a lot of expertise in?
I will say I was kind of surprised how violent and graphic they get with the war stuff, just to throw that out there. And there are some moments I was, like... There's one part where Violet is basically trying to kill herself And I was like, wow, they're actually not really pulling their punches here that I would expect Kiwani, like punches I would expect Kiwani to pull. Other studios might try this kind of stuff, but like I was actually kind of glad that they were willing to go there. But I think the problem is none of that is important to like what the point of the show seems to be, like why the war happened, or, you know, like the actual war itself wasn't important. The point is that Violet went through it and now she's here. And it's the point of the show is like, what is she doing now to, you know, grow as a person and try to get past the horrible things that she went through and learn about, you know,
help other people.
You know, she learns about being a human, but also healing. What I'm
saying is if Violet Evergarden was more like Sword, had already gone through her development by the time the show began.
She is still developing as a character here, so I don't know if I would say but that is the point of the show. And going back to like the war, so like in this episode, in episode 12, like it's not a flashback, like some of like the remnants of the other faction are trying to start the war up again, and it's like, we didn't know why the war started to begin with. We don't care about the war part. Like, none of this has to do with Violet growing as a person. And they try to throw in some stuff about her not taking orders, even though the whole point of the episode is her taking orders. I don't even want to get into that. But
it sounds to me like Violet Evergarden, maybe where it's stumbling now is that it's trying to tackle perhaps too many plot threads at once. Like, my understanding, I think, is we all kind of hoped Violet Evergarden would largely focus on, you know, what does it mean for somebody who has gone through war, something as traumatic as war, and how do they pick up the pieces afterward? And the way you guys are describing things, at least to me, feels like maybe
they try that, but then they try a lot of other things. So that's probably fair.
Yeah, and maybe those don't work out as well.
Yeah, that's probably a fair assessment. Because the episodes that are good are ones where her clients are actually dealing with some really heavy loss and tragedy in their life, and she learns from that, and that's great. Like, because then it all kind of ties together. And there's a couple episodes where that really hits home, and it's like, man, that's what this show could have and should have been. And it's just not consistent enough.
And then it's like, I don't want to kill, even though they're killing me. And I won't take orders because I was ordered to not take orders.
I feel like if we had had this conversation last week, I would have been like higher up on the show. And just this.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because they were on a pretty good streak. I know Iroh didn't necessarily like the episode 8 and 9 with the flashback, but
they were
okay.
They were fine.
And I think we were on a good streak of where it was like between episode 5 and like 11, which is a pretty good chunk. I mean, that's 6 episodes of like, okay, these are all pretty good episodes. I think the ship has been righted and we're in, you know, moving in the right direction.
Yeah.
And then, you know, we get a bomb like this week and it's like, oh, come on. We were so close.
I think for me, it's like, I believe you guys, if you guys claim that Violet is good now, but I think for me, it's just like, even if a show manages to hit some really high highs, like it takes a serious level of quality for me to create inconsistency.
Mm-hmm.
Like it just because you never know what you just don't know where your expectations are anymore.
Yeah.
Right.
And, you know, that combined with the weak start, you know, I think that, I mean, for me, that's why I totally fell off. And, you know, which is a shame because like the way you guys are talking about it now kind of does start to sound like the Violet Evergarden that I was hoping for, you know, before it had started airing.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It does touch. It does start to move into those areas and then they pull the rug out from under us. So,
yep.
You know, hopefully they can do something with the last two episodes, but like, I feel like that's not enough time for this show to like, comfortably pivot to comfortably pivot from wherever we are now with this war thing to some kind of satisfactory stopping point.
I guess that's the thing. Does this war thing, does it feel like it's shaping up to be this show's final arc?
I don't know.
I think so.
I don't know what else they're going to do.
Because if that's how it's deciding to end it, that, man.
Yeah, so.
I don't know. I guess how else would you end a show? I mean, I guess that's always the difficult thing with a show like Violet or shows like it is, you know, how do you end things on a satisfying note when it is largely about these kind of episodic events?
Right.
And one of the methods is to introduce a larger, you know, overarching conflict, but that doesn't always work, you know, especially if you haven't spent the time laying the foundation. But
I hope somebody does break out like what episodes were directly taken from the novels and what were anime original. I'd be very interested to see that because
it does feel like
a chopped up Franken show. Can I say that again?
Frankson
show. It does feel like a chopped up kind of like almost like it's two several different stories. You know, hacked together.
Yeah.
And I'd be curious to see how that breaks out. And, you know, I think when we first talked about this in the podcast, is this the first time where instead of Kiwani trying to polish, trash source material, is this the other way around? They kind of botch.
Well, Violet Evergarden was the first one that actually, like, won the, Kiwani Light Novel Award that they never give the award for. Everything else they've adapted was like, it's the honorable mention because it wasn't good enough to win
they
our
made
award,
up just to
everyone.
Steal idea, show ideas.
Exactly.
So that they never actually... that's the first time they decided to actually award the award instead of just give a runner-up
instead
and steal the idea for an anime. I don't even think Sound Euphonium won. Well, to be fair, Sound Euphonium is also trash. That's basically a... how should I put it? It's a little more explicit. Let's put it that way. There's a lot of lust in that one. Violet Evergarden still kind of disappointing, unfortunately. But
yep.
I don't know if I regret watching it, but I just I'm disappointed.
I don't regret dropping it.
Yeah. All right, so we were going to talk about Darling in the Franxx, but we kind of vetoed it last minute.
I do want to shout out Ancient Magus Bride.
Is that still going?
I've slowly been catching up on.
Are y'all actually watching that?
We benched it in favor of. We benched it in favor of South Pole Garo and Takagi.
At least for Garo, you made the right choice.
Right now that it's like the half week between seasons.
Oh jeez!
No, there's no between. We still have episodes next week.
Oh Christ! But now that the other shows we were watching finished, we're slowly catching up on that, and it seems pretty good still.
I feel like you guys.
We've not hit the episode that everyone was like talking about as being great.
I feel like you guys were kind of down on that for a while.
I was always fine with it.
Or at least not like super enthusiastic about it.
It is a bit slick.
Is that going to stop this season? I know there's a lot more.
That is going to be done with the season. My understanding is the latest episode is just the latest chapter of the manga.
They caught up. Okay.
Yeah.
That seems like a popular enough thing. We'll probably see it sometime in the future whenever they get more.
Maybe. Just giving it a shout out to make sure it's not like forgotten in the ether of the rest of the season.
Sure.
Yeah, cool.
I do plan to finish it at some point by the end of the year.
All right. Well, maybe that'll resurface later on in some of our other discussions, but yeah. All right. As I was saying, we kind of vetoed talking about Darling in the Franxx because that is unfortunately continuing, and I'm not sure we really have anything to say about it that we haven't said already at this point.
I'd say you can just take a look at our recent coverage post on the blog. Me and Zig spent some time talking about the last three episodes and why, you know, they're a perfect microcosm of everything wrong with that show. You know, so if you're curious about our thoughts on Darling in the Franxx, you can check it out there. But, you know, otherwise, what else is there to really say about it other than our general continued exasperation with that show and everything it is? So, yeah.
At least there's still two episodes of Lion left.
Is there two? Or
I want to say we're going to episode 44, and we only just got to 42.
Okay. Well, have fun juggling that next year.
Just to
if you want to know like how much stuff is next season, listen to our previous podcast.
I mean, how much stuff is airing alone in the next week? Like, what's coming out?
I don't even know. Just one last thing on Frank's. I really hope they do something that just like totally bonkers, insane, like.
I'm not saying that would save
the show or make it good, but just like at this point, just give me some kind of way out there bizarre spectacle. Like if you want to copy Evangelion so badly, you know, just go completely off the rails, like huge surprise twist, time skip, send us to another dimension. I don't know.
I mean, if nothing else, it would give us something more to talk about, because at this point, there's nothing to talk about with Franks because it's so goddamn predictable. Like, you know, yes, breaking the status quo would be the best possible option at this point. I just don't see it happening.
That's the only even remote hope, I think.
Because that show plays it too goddamn safe. Every time – okay, we're not going to get into this. Basically, just every time that show tries to do something interesting, because it does occasionally do things interesting, it always just pulls back at the last second and doesn't commit to it.
Yeah.
You know, it just gestures at it. But you can read that in our post.
Yeah. So go check that out. And I think that pretty much does it. We're done with the winter season. We are doing a winter wrap-up post, which we expect to have out probably in the next couple. Well, that may or may not be out before the podcast. We'll see. But
that depends when the podcast is.
We have a lot of posts, I think, going out over the next 3 days. And again, we're recording on Friday, and you'll probably be listening to this on Monday if we go normal scheduling. So we got a lot of stuff going on. I am working on finishing up part one of our spring 2018 guide is out. So you can check that out for the shows that are coming out next week. I am doing my best to get part two and three finished. So those will also be coming out in the next couple of days if they're not up by the time you're listening to this. And like I said, we have a special surprise on Sunday. I think that's going to do it. Obviously, you can check out everything we write on theglorioblog.com. You can follow us on Twitter at theglorioblog. Please like, comment, subscribe, or whatever on iTunes.
Tell your enemies.
Tell your friends and enemies. We don't care. The views count the same. I'm working on possibly putting out the podcast on some other podcast platforms as they keep popping up, like Spotify and whatnot, looking into that, but you know, we'll see how that goes. And well, the Spotify one is complicated apparently, so I'm not gonna get to that. All right, and so that'll do it, and we will see everybody for the upcoming anime apocalypse next week.
We've been through this before. Could we get through it again?
Yeah. So that'll do it. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Let us march to
our
deaths.
See you later.
April to our deaths, please.